Locker.
But I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra. And since I made it here, I can make it easier. They love me everywhere. I used to come to Harlem. All of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway.
See a lot of people who maybe aren't progressive.
And as I dip my shoulder, that I'm sure somebody spit in.
It's a physical game.
A monster jam by Blake Griffin. Oh, what a play by Blake. The fans can hardly believe what they just saw.
This is the Backdoor Cut, KFN.com, 1600 Utica Avenue, Southeast Minneapolis. Nope, St. Louis Park, Minnesota. KFN.com on intersection Saturdays. The Sauce is where you can find our podcast. This is the Variety Hour. Basketball coming up in just a little bit. Beautiful, gorgeous day here at the Clear Channel Conglomerate in West End, right behind Toby Keith's, right by that Arby's, and by the Lian Shin, that Brett Cloutier, who's in Brainerd, we all know and love very well.
I love that Lian Shin. That's the one thing about being in Brainerd is it's great in the summer. It's great with the lake. You got the sun shining every day. It never rains, it seems like. But the food choices here are just pitiful.
Really?
We have the world's smallest Olive Garden that's on the streets of my house.
I do love Olive Garden, though.
It looks like it's going to seat like 12 people. There's no Chipotle. There's no Lian Shin, like you said. There really is one thing. I mean, you got your Subways, your McDonald's, your Burger King, et cetera. But there just really isn't a good food choice. And since we are a meat sauce production, we definitely have to talk about food every once in a while. And while we're on the topic, Greater Minnesota, Brainerd Lakes area, how many people come to the area in the summer need to have better food options?
This show is definitely not diseased.
Aren't there like some sweet hole-in-the-wall places, some like small diners or something like that where you can get some down-home cooking and that kind of stuff? I feel like small towns, and Brainerd isn't that small, but you know, you're in Baxter, and you know, Brainerd's not that, it's not that huge either, so I feel like there might be some specialty places.
Well, here's the thing with that is that most small towns, like you said, have like little hole-in-the-wall diners or cafes that you go to in the downtown area. Well, Brainerd's downtown area is dead. And the small little like local places everyone wants to go to are on the lake. So naturally, they're selling some sort of walleye or seafood variety.
Right.
And, well, it's not going to be cheap. So it's, oh, sure, let's go out to Ivan's, or let's go out to Ernie's, or let's go out to Zorba's and get pizza. Well, it's on the lake, so there's like a $5 charge and everything you buy, including beers, just to make ends meet for their own business.
I feel like Zorba's is pulled off the pizza place while also party place kind of bit. Am I right, or is that just hearsay?
Well, the invite's been in the mail in your mailbox for 2 years.
Has it been?
To enjoy a weekend up here, but it's the Brainerd one and the Grand Rapids one and the Detroit Lakes one are the three big ones, and those are the ones where they have kind of that almost that clubby dance floor feeling on weekends, Friday and Saturday night. But the other ones are more your pizza place, are more where you boat up and eat on the lake, but it's not as much of a nightlife scene. It's really good food, and I'm not going to sit here and knock on Zorba's, but the prices are just extreme, and a lot of that is their location. When you're on a lake, and that's where Zorba's on the lake, you're going to have to pay higher amount of taxes, higher amount of property fees, et cetera, et cetera. So you got to charge more, and it is unfortunate.
Could there be a worse combination than a Saturday night with pizza, beer, and a dance floor? That just sounds like a lot of rumbling around and a lot of it sounds like the cleanup at 2 a.m. would be a lot of vomit, and the bathrooms would be probably pretty disgusting, and everybody's going to walk out of there gaining like 8 pounds.
Well, it sounds a lot like the basement of the library makes a pizza. I mean, it's kind
Yeah, exactly. An awful combination.
Yeah, you know what happens when you go to the basement of the library and a Mesa Pizza? You don't get home till 4 because the line of Mesa Pizza goes all the way towards St. Paul.
Or you get...
You gain 8 pounds.
Or you get beat up by a girl in the line. I told you that story, didn't I?
That is it. You did on air. That's a great story. Anytime you get beat up by a girl, make sure you tell me as soon as possible.
I'll try and get beat up by girls more often so we have some fodder for the show. This is the Backdoor Cut Variety Hour. We haven't had a true Variety Hour in quite some time. Justin Gard was nice enough to join us last week. Kelsey Schultz and Meat Sauce the week before that. Lindsey Gensel the week before that, who did some very intrepid reporting for the MLB RBI World Series, which I actually used to be, I don't know, Brett Cloutier, if you knew that, I used to be a player in the RBI leagues of around the area. Steve Winfield does a great job down there with all those 16 to 18 year olds and the younger division as well, the 13 to 15 year olds, and really that's honestly what actually eventually led me to Augsburg, and I can't thank them enough. So she did some great stuff, had a nice lunch with Commissioner Seelig, I saw, so she's doing big things while we're doing the backdoor cut, which one day could be big, is not very big right now, but we're grinding away while she's tweeting in 140 characters about what Commissioner has to say on very many topics. So it's been 3 weeks without a very true variety hour. We're gonna bite the bullet here, Brett Cloutier. Go guestless, and we're going to go with a number of backdoor cut staples, I guess, to get us back down to our roots, back home to where we're more comfortable. We're not really good with people outside of talking to each other, Brett. I think both of us know that. And we're going to talk some Twins to each other. A three-pointer of NFL bits as the season quickly approaches, Hall of Fame game in our rearview mirror, week one of the preseason coming up. And then we're going to do a little bit that we just like to call, Brett Cloutier, What is it? It's Buy the Ticks, or I can't remember, actually. Oh, click.
Or shoot a brick.
Buy the ticket or shoot a – no, it's not. That's not what it is either.
Buy the ticks or shoot a brick.
Yeah. It almost rhymes. Back to our cut faithful. We'll know.
Make the click.
There it is. Make the click or shoot the brick. This is already going very well 6 minutes into the show. So the backdoor cut faithful will recognize that bit as one we've renamed many times, and we have a story behind why it is called that in this specific case. Brett – it is the dog days of summer. I mean, you were right in the middle of it, and it really couldn't be showing for anyone much more than your Minnesota Twins. Although, I'll say this: you look at the standings right now.
We're
12 and a half. Two games out of third. Our run differential still holding right around that negative 70 mark. Not the worst in the division in run differential anymore, since the Cleveland Indians have gotten shellacked 10 games in a row, and they're plummeting towards us, 10 and a half out. Well, we're 12 and a half out. We're 48 and 61, Brett, and you look and Denard Spann said today on FM 100.3 KFAN, the flagship, the sports leader of the Upper Midwest. He said it with Paul Allen today. You know, we don't think we're out. We're not going to say we're out till we're mathematically eliminated. We're going to keep fighting, keep battling, like we're right in the middle of a wild card hunt. And as we go to the wild card standings, not exactly in the middle of it, they're 10.5 out of the number two wild card spot there as well. And there's seven teams within five games. So we have a lot of work to do still, but things have gotten a little more positive for your Minnesota Twins. They have won 8 of the last 11. We haven't played the Fire Guardy bit in a while, so Brett Cloutier, I imagine that since you haven't called for it, that means you're pretty happy with everything.
Well, I would like to hear the bit, because I do have a nice little radar of where I would put Guardy's hot seat.
Yeah.
I still don't think it's great. I mean, you can't forget how poorly the team started out again this season as our guy. The Twins aficionado Nick Nelson tweeted today, or maybe it was late last night.
Yeah.
I just thought this morning was, this team wouldn't have gotten out to a bad start when it had decent pitching. They're not out of it. I mean, I could see us being 4 or 5 games out if we just would have played, mediocre baseball in that first month and a half this season. But it's actually been fun to watch. I know you saw a lot of people wrote about all over the area that the Twins are a team that maybe could score 700, 800 runs this season. And it started off really slow. That Baltimore series at Camden Yard to start the season, we almost got no hit in the first or second game of the year.
Yeah.
We really didn't get off to the
against Jake Arrieta, like an average pitcher.
Willingham in the lineup, Maurer, healthy again, Morneau healthy, and we fall flat on our face early in the season, didn't score a lot of runs. But this offense has been fun. 10 runs in the second inning last night against the Cleveland Indians, that was a lot of fun to watch. And so while the Twins aren't necessarily at 500 or even close yet, 14 games below 500, at least the product on the field is a little more enjoyable. People are going out to the ballpark, and it's given something to do on these hot, humid, boring nights of August.
Speaking of hot, Josh Willingham has been on fire lately. You could look at his stats last year, 136 games for Oakland, and you see the 29 home run mark, 98 RBIs. Don't look now, but he's already at that 29 home run mark, Brett Cloutier. I boldly stated to one of my buddies last week that he wouldn't even reach 30 and that he'd hit a wall. Well, he's already almost a week later when he was at 23. He's skyrocketed up to 29 home runs, 83 RBIs, 263. He hit 246 last year. Never going to be a 300 hitter. He's a 262 career hitter. So, but very encouraging stuff from him, and you obviously got to be extremely happy don't trade him at the deadline. Quite honestly, and I'm Mr. Negative when it comes to pretty much everything Minnesota sports, but looking right now, and you can hear it in my voice, call me crazy. I'm always a little optimistic, and I'm going to bring it right back down here in a second. But you know, you look at the 8 out of 11. You look at Joe Mauer, you know, being Joe Mauer. He's doing what he does. 321, you know, seven bombs, obviously not exactly what you want. But he's never going to be that 28 home run guy he was a few years ago when he got that MVP. And 56 RBIs, you want to see like about 85 or 90 from him. It's like Michael Young statistics if you can compare it to somebody like that. So you got to be encouraged by that. Domit's been well. Span, who those reports, as you said, Brett Cloutier, last week, we were talking MLB trade deadline. Those reports were false about him rejecting that Cincinnati Reds deal. Turned out we would have gotten Mike Leake if that deal had gone through. It did not. But he's, you know, hitting right about 290. Mastriani, Plouffe, the young guys are producing. Like you're saying, it's not the offense, Brett. And as we'll get to here in a second when we do a little digging on what could have been with the Minnesota Twins, you look over at pitching, and that's where the real problem is. If you look at overall about Guardy, you obviously have the fire Guardy. Where's the fire Rick Anderson bit? I mean, you've got Liriano's gone. Diamond's producing. Deduno's producing. Although Deduno's been a little up and down as far as wins go lately. But looking up and down the rotation, you still have Blackburn in there. Terrible. You know, Pavano's waiting to come back up.
Well, Blackburn could have been there all-star, remember.
Yeah, of course. Pavano's waiting to come back up, and we all just want to turn our heads the other way and see him take a Garrett Jones-like line drive off the foot and break it. But when you look at Rick Anderson, I mean, where does the blame fall with him, and when is it going to be time for him to move on?
First off, to touch on Josh Willingham, the most impressive thing that I've seen about Josh Willingham is his ability to take walks. He's got a 379 on-base percentage, and his base on-ball percentage is very, very similar to that of Joe Mauer. I mean, he's walking at a higher rate than Denard Span, Ben Revere, guys that you want to draw walks. That's been the most impressive thing about Josh Willingham. You know, the problem with Rick Anderson, and I think this is why I believe that a hot seat for Guardy is still at least a lukewarm, to give more of a verbal rating of it, instead of a color rating, mm-hmm. He's a lukewarm on the hot seat because he will never part with his buddy, his best friend, Rick Anderson, as pitching coach.
Right.
And that's obviously been the problem. We've talked about time and time again. Guys like R.A. Dickey, Max Garza. I mean, just the variety of pitchers that just go to other teams and pitch really well. I mean, it's starting to get sickening watching these guys succeed that we're here and we just cast off. Even Francisco Liriano, sure, he was jacked up for his first start being against the Minnesota Twins. That was the best I've seen him throw all year against the Minnesota Twins. And like we just got done talking about, this is a Minnesota Twins lineup that is not maybe the best in the American League, but definitely in the top half dangerous-wise in the American League. So problem with Guardians, he'll never get rid of Rick Anderson. You're seeing guys like Scott Diamond's been legit. I mean, you look at his sabermetrics along with his ERA, he's at a 2.91 ERA, and his Sabres match up with a 3.66. You look at, you know, Cole DeVries has been okay. He's at an ERA in the threes, but his numbers are actually a lot worse than that. His fastball is top, his average is at 90 miles per hour, and for a guy that tries to get strikeouts, that's not great. The Doodle's base on ball rate is atrocious. I think it's about 5 per inning. With the big club, that's always been a knock on him, and he throws a lot of pitches. The Phillies have been okay. I don't think they're anyone we could hang our hats on for the future. And you look right now, I think you think going into next year, Scott Diamond's your number one pitcher.
Jeez.
You know that the Twins aren't going to sign a big name in the offseason. They're going to get a Jason Marquis type guy, or they're going to get a Carlos Silva type guy. They're going to get someone who can patch it together. It's not going to be anyone good. They're going to keep their fingers crossed that Kyle Gibson can get healthy next year, maybe start in the back end of that rotation. Scott Baker gets healthy off his Tommy John. Maybe Pavano will be back, but I don't think looking forward, and I heard him talk about that same Denard Span interview with PA earlier today on 9 and 2 on KFAN, KFAN.com, that he thought that the way they've pitched, Deduno and DeVries have earned themselves a spot to be on the rotation next year.
I hope so. What else do you have?
Well, that's the sad point. I disagree. But because that Anderson hasn't produced some of these pitchers, or we don't have the farm system of talent, and you look at, so Aaron Gleeman wrote about this today. You look at Alex Swimmers and Kyle Gibson, when you drafted them with first-round picks in 2009 and 2010, you would have assumed by the latter half of the 2012 season they were at least your number 3 and 4 or your 4 and 5 stars. Wimmer's now is getting the Tommy John surgery. Gibson got it a year ago. So that's nothing Rick Anderson can deal with. Maybe it's you stay away from college pitchers in the future, but Rick Anderson isn't really on the floor trying, you know, making draft picks. But every guy that comes up just seems to not progress like he should.
It seems that Span was, and I would guess, and having listened to the interview, I would hope that he meant this, that situationally, looking at who else we have, I think they've earned a spot. I mean, Diamond, you have to give a spot in the rotation next year. I mean, 10,
100%.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 10 and 10 and 2 with a 2.91 ERA. He's obviously been phenomenal. DeVries, of course, a little more up and down. And Dedeuno, you know, those sample sizes are a little small. But I think the point remains, and we'll get to this in a second, as you said, a lot of people being hot that were here and now have moved on to bigger and better things. But the point remains that if you don't give those guys a shot, who are you trotting out? I mean, who is your rotation? I mean, Pavano, to have him on the team next year would just hurt the eyes. You know, Liriano's gone. Blackburn's horrible. Baker, of course, will probably be back. And depending on you know when he's available, I'm sure he'll be right in the rotation. But if you don't have those guys, you're piecing it together. So while we're on that,
my thing. Just a quick rebuttal of that is, realistically though, if you get average Scott Baker, and Nick Blackburn does not have a career 7.42 ERA, he's been a guy between 4.5 and 5 who gets ground balls.
Yeah.
You're gonna have that Nick Blackburn, a Scott Baker even in the fours, which is very common for him, a healthy Carl Pavano, not pitching like for the Carl Pavano when we got him from the Cleveland Indians in 2009. The Carl Pavano, even of the last two seasons, if we would have had that sort of production from our starting pitchers the whole season, we wouldn't be 12.5 games out of the first place in American League Central. We'd be within striking distance. The way our lineup is produced, they don't necessarily need an elite start. It'd be great because I think it gets them over the hump and they can become the upper echelon of American League Central again like they were, you know, for many years during the 2000s. But the pitching staff is okay if they can have normal seasons. It's just been so atrocious, some of the performances these guys have had this season.
Well, what is a normal season when you're looking at Carl Pavano then, when he's consistently gotten worse since he's come to the Twins? What is a normal season for Nick Blackburn, who at 17 starts this year, it's a pretty big sample size. It's not like he's just had Dedeuno-like starts or DeVries-type starts. Again, a bigger sample size there, and he's never been a guy that you've looked at and said, yeah, this guy's consistently a 4-0 guy. Being around a 4-5 or a 5, that's not that far away from jumping to that 6 or 7. And you look at Baker, you don't know if he's going to come. You've got a lot of question marks. You're making a lot of assumptions there if you're saying that you bring in one guy off the market, a shutdown guy, and you're going to get seasons from those other guys. Why would you get seasons? And I think that's the main point with this pitching staff.
Just look at Nick Blackburn in the past. 2008, he was 11-11 with a 4.05. 2009, 11-11.
Right, but those are distant memories.
4.03, 2010, 10-12 with a 5.4.
Yeah.
Even last year, 7-10 with a 4.49. If Nick Blackburn, a 4.49 ERA this season, with this lineup that we've had, scoring, I think, 470.
Yeah, but you're lowering it 3 runs right now. You're lowering it 3 runs if you're saying that.
He's obviously had a down season. Something hasn't clicked for him.
He was at 5-4, though, 2 years ago, and that's not very good either. That's hanging on to a number 5 rotation spot.
Nick Blackburn has a 5.4 ERA this year. He's not 4-7. He's at least 2 or 3 wins better. With this lineup that we have, this is the best lineup the Twins have put out there since probably the 2009 season.
Yeah, no, absolutely, but just because he's putting up a 5-4, that's, and he's getting wins as opposed to getting losses, that still doesn't mean he's a serviceable quality pitcher. And a five spot is all he's worth if he's putting up a 5-4 ERA.
Absolutely. No, if I think he's a better option down the road looking towards next season than Cole DeVries or Samuel Dedeuno.
I have 6 options for you that would be better.
Okay.
What we're going to do here, and you kind of took notice, Breck Luthier, of Mr. A.J. Pierzynski this past week, hitting 5 home runs in 5 games. Very impressive. And it got me thinking, you know, this offense has been good, definitely. The offense has been very, very good. But look at the success of other people that have been here. Look at the pitching staff that you could form with pitchers that have been here. And so I kind of took it literally. I said, you know what? And I'm not sure, and this is going to be the raging debate with this, I'm not sure if it's this bad everywhere else, if Boston or the Yankees or the Marlins could put together a team that is rivaling the team they have now, but of former players, but I'm not going to go back and look because that seems like a lot of work. And looking at our team right here, having the knowledge of who's been on our team and who is on it now, and look at the comparisons, we're going to go through them and see just how bad it really is, Breck Luthier. Basically, you can call it the Minnesota Twins verse. You just drop the T. The Minnesota wins. I think with this team.
I see you did there.
Yeah, so just listen to this team for me real quick. Starting at catcher. The 2012 Minnesota wins. Catcher A.J. Pierzynski, as we mentioned. 293 this year, 21 home runs, 62 RBIs in just 340 14 ABs for your Chicago White Sox. And, Brett, let's just compare, because the Minnesota Twins of last night put up 14 hits and 14 runs, one of their better offensive nights of the year. So let's just take the Minnesota Wins lineup and compare it to last night's lineup for your Twins. Catching, batting sixth, Ryan Domann, 290 on the season, very impressive numbers. And if you look at his power numbers, not quite what A.J. Pierzynski's are. Hitting 12 home runs, 55 RBIs. Pierzynski bringing the power. Domit, serviceable, without a doubt. More than what we expected. But Brett Clutier, if A.J. Pierzynski was in a Minnesota Twins uniform, we'd have nine more home runs.
Well, here's the thing with that, is that you're going off of, you're going to use Maurer as the DH. So I think the debate is, would you rather have Pierzynski or rather have Maurer? So I'm going to call an audible on this.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with the Maurer-Pierzynski debate. You know, I'm a Sabres guy, and using your Minnesota wins, well, wins above replacement this season, Joe Maurer has 3.4, and A.J. Pierzynski at 3.2. So while the power numbers are there for A.J., Maurer's still better defensively, he's still better all around as a hitter, and while he might not be worth the $23 million that we paid him, $16, $17, $18 million, probably a realistic price, Maurer's had a very good season this year. They have 321, a 415 on-base percentage, you know, 56 RBI, 62 runs scored, 7 home runs. I mean, he's having a solid season. He's doing 7 home runs with, honestly, more than a lot of people, most diehard Twin fans, could have picked him for this season. He'll probably end up getting a 10 or 12. I take Joe Maurer over A.J. Pierzynski in a heartbeat.
Garrett Jones is your first baseman for your Minnesota Wins. Remember, former farm guy for the Twins, and then went to Pittsburgh, had a monstrous first season in about 90 games, hit 21 bombs. Hasn't quite had that power success that he did that first season with Pittsburgh, but he is one of the guys that is turning around that franchise in trying to drive them to their first playoff appearance in, God, it would be like 28, 29 years at the least. I think they've had, 27 losing seasons in a row or something like that. It's just some outrageous number. But Garrett Jones hitting 271, 16 homers, 52 RBIs in just 292 at-bats for Pittsburgh. Your first baseman last night is the suddenly resurgent Minnesota Twin first baseman, Justin Morneau, hit 2 bombs last night, 3 of 5 with 4 RBIs on the season, hitting 275, 15 homers, 54 RBIs. Very similar numbers. He does have about 60 more at-bats than Jones, but very similar offensive numbers, Brett Clutier. And I called for Justin Morneau's head. Suddenly, things looking a lot better for Mr. Morneau.
The thing with Morneau is that he was, and same with Garrett Jones as well, they both really, really struggled against left-handed pitching. But Justin Morneau over the last month, I think, is batting maybe in the lead, like in the 300 against lefties, at least maybe over the last couple weeks. I saw a stat somewhere, but Morneau's, and that shows that Morneau's starting to pick up the ball a little bit better. Maybe the concussion symptoms are much minimal. His reaction time's picked up a little bit. I like Justin Morneau. I like what I'm seeing from Morneau. You're starting to see those towering home runs that we haven't seen from him all season. Most of his home runs this year have been wall scrapers. We had that home run that he hit in the fifth inning last night. That was your typical 10, 15, 20 rolls up in the right field bleachers. I take Justin Morneau over Garrett Jones. Defensively, he's better than Jones. And, you know, his contract's obviously a lot bigger, so from that standpoint, yeah, Jones would probably be the better option. But strictly looking performance-based, I take Justin Morneau.
Okay, so 2-0 Minnesota Twins over the Wins. The Wins not living up to their name. Second baseman for the Minnesota Wins. This is where it gets a little weak. Nick Punto, who was benched by Boston earlier, or Orlando Hudson. You can take your pick of the two. They'll both be defensive guys. Hudson does nothing but win. He was also benched by Chicago earlier this year. He's still getting some at-bats. He's got 227 this year. So he's playing pretty much 2 out of every 3 days, hitting 194, 2 home runs, 22 RBIs. Not much of a better situation for your Twins. Last night, Tsuyoshi Nishioka, first ground ball to him in the bottom of the first inning. It was the first batter that Cleveland had up, Jason Kipnis, E4. So Nishioka with an E4 in his first game back, and also went 0 for 5, by the way, struck out once. This is ugly. Nick Punto or Orlando Hudson versus Tsuyoshi Nishioka.
It's not even close. I'll take half of Orlando Hudson or half of Nick Punto Tsuyoshi Nishioka. The fact that I even have to say his name again on our radio show hurts me to say, but it's all right. I think Punto batted 6 this season at one point for the Boston Red Sox. Shows you how much shambles that team is in. But the Bobby Valentine era has knocked them off to a good start. Well, Hudson always seems like a good clubhouse guy. A lot of energy, always kind of chirps the other team. Good guy you want to have your team. That guy who's playing second base last night doesn't do anything for me. Punto or Hudson is my pick at second base.
Second base for either team.
Disease.
Terry Francona is just sitting comfortably in his Posh and Tony ESPN studio. How much is he loving his life right now?
I don't know. know. I think when you're a manager like him, you've won World Series. Is as much as his paycheck's great and doesn't have the stress, you know, he'd like to be in there with the day-to-day operations of a team.
Well, he's got to be looking at the Boston Red Sox and saying, "Look at me now. How do you like that Boston Red Sox?"
He says it like Chris Brown and Busta Rhymes. Look at me now.
Look at me now.
Do you think he listens to that? You think that's his alarm every morning on his iPhone?
I think he's a country music and a few beers on the porch kind of guy.
I could see him as a Simon and Garfunkel guy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mrs. Robinson, yeah. Where have you gone? Where have you gone? Nomar Garcia Parra. The Red Sox turned their lonely eyes to you. We move to third base. Michael Kadire going on the 15-day DL, but he's not on it yet, so we're going to use him, Brett Cloutier, for our Minnesota wins. 260, 15 home runs, 56 RBIs, and 350 ABs for the Colorado Rockies. A pretty normal season for him. If he'll probably get to that 21-22 home run mark if he can get healthy enough in time. Hit about 260, 265. Third baseman last night for your Minnesota Twins was Jamie Carroll. 0-for-3. Good defensive guy, much like Mr. Punto that you just picked. But on the season, hitting only 245. Zero home runs, 32 RBIs. You taking Kadire, are you taking, and granted, Kadire, awful at third base defensively in the one season he did play there. Notice I'm getting a little creative with positions just to kind of fill the lineup because, you know, hey, the Minnesota Wins are versatile. You know, they're versatile. They can play a lot of positions. So we're taking Kadire or we're taking Jamie Carroll?
Well, if you're Michael Kadire, you can play a lot of positions, but and as much as the average fans think you're a hero, you actually play many positions very poorly.
Wow.
But you can't take away that bat out of the lineup.
Nope.
Michael Kadire does so much for the Minnesota Wins that Minnesota Twins third base and Jamie Carroll does not even compare.
Minnesota Wins. Would you have taken Trevor Plouffe or Michael Kadire?
You got to take Michael.
You still got to take Kadire.
The longevity of what he's done over his career, with Plouffe having to kind of maybe be a one-hit wonder with this season, we'll see what happens down the road, but you got to go Kadire because of longevity.
2-2. Shortstop is J.J. Hardy. He is only hitting 227, does still have those power numbers, 15 homers, 43 RBIs, has already racked up 450 at-bats for the Baltimore Orioles, who seemingly were in it out there in the East for a while. Looks like they might be slipping a little bit, but they're keeping it close with New York, one of the better seasons they've had, and he is right at the center of that. Shortstop Brian Dozier, Brett Cloutier, hitting 234 this season. Our infield's bad. God, did you just hear the three names I read? Nishioka, Dozier, and Carroll? It can't have come to this. Would you have taken Danny Valencia or Michael Kadire? Okay, probably not Michael Kadire. If you put all these players into one, would they equal a Michael Kadire or a J.J. Hardy? It's unbelievable. It's horrible. The left side of our infield, awful. Until Morneau started hitting, it was really that bad.
I definitely take J.J. Hardy. I mean, his power number speaks for himself. And again, when you have horrible fielding all the way around, you got Kadire playing third, you got Jones playing first, you got A.J. behind the plate, you got Orlando Hudson at second base. You're going to need a team that can score a lot of runs, and J.J. Hardy's power numbers. Obviously, he's not having the year that he did last year. He hit over 30 home runs for the Orioles. 15 home runs, 40 some RBIs are still very solid numbers. Average is low, but so is Brian Dozier's. J.J. Hardy is the pick for the Minnesota win.
Torrey Hunter, left fielder, really turned it on for the Angels these past couple weeks. He's hitting 292 now, back around that 300 mark. 11 home runs, 54 RBIs, and 332 at bats. He's got hits in 8 of his last 10. 5 multi-hit games among those 10. Your left fielder last night was Josh Willingham, 1-of-4, hit a home run, 2 RBIs, and on the season, as we already chronicled, 263, 29 homers, and 83 RBIs. This one seems like it's pretty obvious, Brett Cloutier, although Torrey Hunter, I mean, he did so much for your Minnesota Twins when he was here, and he's still amazingly still holding down an outfield spot for that crowded LA outfield.
As much as it pains me to do this, there's a few things I knew in life, and that was that Torrey Hunter was the best baseball player in the world. That was one of the things I grew up living with. Mm-hmm. Kevin Garnett was the best Timberwolves in the world, but
yeah.
As we found out in the last couple of weeks, neither of those are true. Josh Willingham.
Wow.
Josh Willingham is definitely the pick for the Minnesota Twins. 29 home runs now in consecutive seasons. High batting average, high OPS. He's done everything the Minnesota Twins have. Obviously, defensively, he's a little shaky. He's a minus outfielder, but he's not as bad as Michael Kadire was. I was an awful, awful Michael Kadire. I hated Michael Kadire in the outfield. I hated him in any position. He could hit the ball last year. Defensively, he was atrocious. Sure, he had the arm, but he had no range. Range trumps arm every day of the week. Willingham's power, though, getting back between him and Hunter, Willingham's power takes the cake. I love everything he's done at the plate. He's just been the ultimate team player, and even in a season that he did not think would be this bad, he seems like he stayed positive, never went to the media. Good teammate, good hitter, Willingham.
Of course, Breck Luthier referencing the bracket of Minnesota Timberwolves individual seasons in which he took Kevin Love 26-13, also a 26-40 record, over Kevin Garnett's MVP season in the basketball segment. Coming up in just a little bit, you'll be able to hear more about that. 3-3 wins versus Twins. Center fielder Carlos Gomez, we're so familiar with. He started to swing the bat better too, Breck Luthier. Two home runs in the last week, 253 on the season. 9 bombs, 28 RBIs, 20 stolen bases in just 84 games. Has played about 80% of the games for Milwaukee this season. Center fielder last night for the Minnesota Twins was none other than Denard Span. One of six, but his numbers are still looking good. 286 on the season. And the 3 home runs, 34 RBIs, 12 stolen bases. Doesn't have the power or speed. Denard Span, though, hitting for average. And like we've talked about during the trade deadline, before the trade deadline, and now up to this moment, is that consummate Shannon Stewart solid guy that's going to get you by and get you hits when you need them. Denard Span in center or Carlos Gomez?
I'm going Denard Span. Yeah. Inside and close. Gomez, yeah, he's sure he's good defensively. He has a strong arm. He has great range. He's good at the bases. But he's an idiot. How about that home run he hit the other day that was falling? He ran all the way around the bases. That was on the not top 10.
The fake home run.
He's a good teammate. He's a smart player. He's got a low salary.
Yeah.
He gets on base. I mean, he's in the 50s for runs. Or he has 56 runs a season. Low bases isn't great. It's not Ben Revere numbers, who we'll touch on here in the next position. But you know, Denard Span over Carlos Gomez is just not even close. He stayed positive. He was hoping to stay on the Twins. He didn't want to be traded. A lot of guys in the situation would have liked to have been traded. He's in the prime of his career. Why not go on a playoff run? He wanted to stay in Minnesota. He's tweeting about how he wanted to stay in Minnesota. Good teammate, good player, overall better center field than Carlos Gomez. Fan for the Minnesota Twins.
4-3 Minnesota Twins. Right field, Jason Kubel of the Arizona Diamondbacks. 281, 23 home runs, 73 RBIs. He slowed down a little bit at the plate, had that torrid start, hit 3 home runs in a game, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, that Saturday, and has swung the bat very well. What we would have hoped to see from him last year, and we did see from him the year before that, letting him go at the end of this last offseason. Jason Kubel versus the hot-hitting Ben Revere, 4-5 last night. 3 runs, 1 RBI, hitting .331 on the season. Doesn't have enough at-bats to qualify for that batting title, but Breck Luthier, he's getting there, 308. Maurer's got 371. Maurer, of course, fourth in the league in batting. Mike Trout leading the AL at .348. Ben Revere brings you no power, but he brings you speed with the 27 stolen bases. Jason Kubel does the opposite. Who are you taking, Ben Revere or Jason Kubel?
Ben Revere's isolated power of 0.58 is about as lower than yours would be if you played for the Minnesota Twins.
Hey, I had a college home run.
I love what Ben Revere can do in the outfield. He's got 11.3 fielding rating. He's a plus fielder. He's one of the best, if not the best defensive fielder in the American League, strictly from a range standpoint. Obviously, his arm is that of a wet noodle. He has a bad arm. You're not going to have Ben Revere bat .330 for you every single season. Hopefully, he bats between .290 and .310. 27 stolen bases. He only played 74 games. That'd be on pace. I mean, if he played a full season, he'd be 50-60 stolen bases. That's something that we haven't seen in Minnesota Twins ever. I mean, Chuck, maybe since the likes of Chuck Knobloch back in 91 in his rookie season, but we haven't seen a guy this with that much of a base stealing threat on this Minnesota Twins team. Kubel's been great. He's got his hit for great power, but he just didn't cut it here. He just never really seemed to reach the expectations. And while Kubel might be the more logical pick, I'm going to go with Ben Revere because what he brings to your team, he brings great defense. He's going to hit the ball. 21-20 game hitting streak going off for Revere. Maybe 21, maybe 30, maybe 56 game hitting. Who knows how this is going to happen for Ben Revere. But his ability to make plays on the bases, it's like a basketball player, Andre Kirilenko, who can make plays without the ball in his hands. Ben Revere can make plays without being at bat. And Jason Kubel, if he doesn't get a hit or doesn't hit a double, that's all he's going to do for you. I like Ben Revere. I like what he brings to the table. Revere over Kubel. In a very, very, very close battle.
The DH for and so I guess I'll compare Ryan Domet and our DH since you put Joe Mauer at catcher. David Ortiz, of course, is your DH for your Minnesota wins. .316 this season, 23 home runs, 58 RBIs, leads the AL in OPS, and he's played in 89 games for the Boston Red Sox. As you said, the team in shambles, but he's still tearing it up offensively. Something we wish we would have stayed with ever since the 2000 season in which we let him leave. David Ortiz or Ryan Domet, .290, 12 home runs, 55 RBIs.
David Ortiz is not even close. I mean, the power number that David Ortiz has, he's just done it for so long. It's like the second he left the Minnesota Twins, he turned into one of the elite power hitters in Major League Baseball. Sure, probably there's a chance he was flirting with some PEDs. Nothing's been proven. David Ortiz, is a definition of what a designated hitter is. The dude mashes. He cannot field, cannot throw, cannot run, but the dude absolutely mashes. Ortiz over Dolman, it's not even close.
If anyone gets hurt, by the way, I got Delman Young, 265, 12 homers, 44 RBIs. He's off the bench if
versus
we need him.
Versus Darren Mastriani.
Who would you take? Who would you take?
12 stolen bases.
Give me Delman Young.
Delman
Young. Yep. Now, and I'm going to go through these quick. Is it a clean sweep? And you're going to want to hear the names, but it could be a clean sweep. Kyle Loesch is my number one. As much as as ridiculous as that sounds and how Twins fans never thought they'd hear that come out of anyone's mouth, Kyle Loesch at number one in the same sentence. Kyle Loesch is my number one for the Minnesota Wins. 12-2, 2.79 ERA, 89 Ks, 23 starts for St. Louis. He's won his last six decisions. He's my number one because he's hot. About 3 weeks ago, it would have been my number two, R.A. Dickey, 14-3, 2.82 ERA, nastiest knuckler that this MLB has seen, 156 Ks and 22 starts for the Mets. Garza's hurt, so hey, you know who I'm going to plug in? My guy Jason Marquis. Ever since he left here, 5-6, but with a 4.1 ERA, 66 Ks and 12 starts for San Diego. Give me Johan. He's on the rehab trail from the minors. He had that... he had that elbow injury, but he's coming back. 6-7, 3.98 ERA and 105 Ks. Phil Humber is my number five. 5-5 with a 6.25 ERA. He's won three of his last four starts. 62 Ks in 16 starts for the Chicago White Sox. It's probably not a sweep. Excuse me, clean sweep, Brett. But I'm taking Loesch, Dickey, Santana. Loesch and Dickey for sure. You know, I'm taking Loesch, Dickey, and Santana over any of the pitchers we have in our roster.
I'll take Scott Diamond's 2.9 ERA and his good sabers in the number four spot in that rotation.
Yep.
Ahead of Garza, Andrew Garza, ahead of a Phil Humbert.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. And then the other guys wouldn't even be close. I mean, Jason Marquis has been okay, and that just sums up the level of...
He's been good.
Look at Ryan Dempster in his first start for the Rangers. He was atrocious. He was
awful.
Bad. Some from the Chicago Cubs. But the American League is. It's so much better baseball. The National League gets quadruple A when it comes to lineups. Solely because you're facing, unless Steven Strasburg is down 373, you're facing for sure out every time you're at, see what I did there, you're facing for sure out every time you are facing a pitcher from the other team. It's, they're giving you an out every time they come up, whereas the American League, you don't have that. It's a completely different league to pitch in, and while Jason Marquis was atrocious at Twins, he's been serviceable for the Padres. Let's not forget, Petco Park is the epitome of a pitcher's park as well. That 4.0 some ERA might as well be 6.2 in a normal ballpark.
So you're leaving DeDuno, DeVries, Pavano, or Blackburn. Oh, by the way, yeah, we also have Francisco Liriano if we need a seventh starter. I don't know if we got that through to everybody yet.
Liriano would be four, Hummer would be five. Let's go with that.
I was just kind of going off the things that are farther in our rearview mirror because I don't want to open any Band-Aids that we have in our wounds after the Francisco Liriano deal and after his two very good starts for the Chicago White Sox. But so you're leaving everybody else out except for Diamond. Let's say Diamond 5 then. Liriano 4 and then Diamond 5 or vice versa.
Quick fun stat for Scott Diamond here is that he has 10 wins this season. You know what team he started on this year in the Twins organization?
Beloit.
He started on the Rochester Red Wings.
No.
The Nines may break camp with the Major League roster.
Yeah.
He has 10 wins. You know, no pitcher has the second most wins on the Twins this season.
Oh, God.
Relief pitcher Jeff Gray has 6. The only other starter, the next starter is Nick Blackburn with 4.
Mm-hmm.
4. Scott Diamond, 10 wins. Didn't even start the first 6 weeks with the Twins. 10-5 this season, 2.9 ERA. Love Scott Diamond. He's been great for us.
So we'll take four wins for the Minnesota Twins there, and they have now 8-6 of the regular Minnesota Twins. Twins can't win. Closer is Joe Nathan, 21 saves, 2.91 ERA for the AL best Texas Rangers. Who do you want, Capsy, Perkins? Who do you want, Brett Cloutier? Take your pick because I take Nathan.
I go Perkins against Joe Nathan, but Joe Nathan, I mean, he's an all-star this season. He's finally bouncing back from that Tommy John surgery that he really struggled with last year. It seemed like his vintage Joe Nathan last year, maybe because the team was atrocious as well. But Nathan, and again, it's not even close.
Would there be a manager in here at all, or no? I take Tom Kelly.
He used to play for the Minnesota Twins.
Who did?
Ron Washington used to play for the Twins.
That's true. He also has a coke addiction, though.
Did.
Bad, right?
Actually, as they say, true addicts. Addiction never leaves.
Hey.
All I do is win. Got money on my mind. I can never get enough.
Minnesota wins, baby.
Everybody hands go up.
Minnesota wins.
And they stay there.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Minnesota wins, take it 9-6 over the Regulation Club, the team that actually still exists, the Minnesota Twins. And my kind of bit here is that, you know, we are that far away, and especially on the pitching side. When you look at people that were here, and of course, Brett Cloutier, you're not going to have these same guys on the roster at once. That's not what I'm saying. But when the point of all this is that, and again, it may be the same way with every club. You know, I haven't studied all 30 teams and said, oh, this is the exact person from this roster, and this is where this guy would fit in this rotation if he was still on this team. That's not what I'm saying. But if you have four or five guys that have been on your team, relatively recently for a few of them, and they would fit in your rotation above a majority of your guys, you've made bad personnel moves, and you've made a lot of very bad choices. And offensively, like you said, Brett, I mean, that's eye-opening that, you know, you would have five or six guys on this team start ahead of guys you've already had. That's a solid thing, but you're also, you have holes up and down that pitching rotation. And like we pretty much laid out, with this skyrocketing offense, something needs to change, either with Rick Anderson, either with the farm system, or with the man at the top. And it did change with the man at the top. Unfortunately, Terry Ryan wasn't left with much. We're going to move on to a little something that we've done here and there, Brett Cloutier.
You've been listening to the Backdoor Cut, a Meat Sauce production.
Thank you, Meat Sauce. This is the Backdoor Cut. And so I think we're probably just going to go, Brett Cloutier, to something we need to do because the season is right around the corner. It is the biggest sport in the country, if not the world. It's the NFL.
1, 2, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, Kobe's got to go. The three. Got it!
Remix.
Three.
Oh, that was weird.
Three.
Didn't work very well.
Three.
This is a three-pointer of the backdoor cut, and is the addition that we like to call the NFL. Brett Cloutier. Three options for you to pick from and analyze from the NFL from the past week or two. It's all from this week. We probably should have gone back and done some digging, but it's lazy reporting. It's the backdoor cut. It's what we pride ourselves on. And number three for me, yesterday, your fourth-round pick for the Minnesota Vikings, Greg Childs, tears both patella tendons in his legs. And this is something that came as a surprise to me because people were talking about, this injury he had before, it was a freak thing. It was just a freak thing. It was a once-in-a-lifetime. No way anything like this could ever happen. And then he goes out and tears both his patella tendons. So not great timing on that story. I'm forgetting where I saw that. But not great timing on that story. And how much of a freak thing can it really be if these legs just keep blowing up?
Well, it sounds like the most excruciating thing ever. He both tore both on the same play.
Yeah.
On the same play, second and last play of practice. It just sounds awful. It just sounds completely awful. And I just don't know how that happens. And I hate using the word injury prone because I don't think that really exists.
Right.
I think it's a phenomenon that doesn't exist, but, I mean, this is definitely in support of that theory.
Could he be injury prone to, like, very rare injuries? Because that seems what it's like. Who tears both patella tendons in their knees?
Apparently, Childs does.
Terrell Owens to the Seahawks. Does this smack of desperation to you? Because it sounds like to me that they're trying to give your boy Tavares Jackson anything, just anything at all, seeing that they pretty much have nothing in the way of receivers and nothing in the way of quarterbacks. This sounds to me like an absolute desperation move that happened today.
I saw a nice tweet. I don't know if it was by Michael Lombardi or someone else on the NFL Network. Was that the Seattle Seahawks don't have a quarterback who can, you know, work with the personality that is Terrell Owens. It's an awful play.
They could have stopped it. Don't have a quarterback, to be
They're
fair.
They're putting my guy up against the wall. They're putting Terrell wants him to fail.
Why do you take it so personally? Why is Tavares still your guy? Will you just let it go? He hasn't been good since he was at D1AA UAB. Or was it UAB? Is that it?
Alabama A&M.
Alabama Tech.
It was Alabama, not the University of Alabama.
Right, so it doesn't really matter.
I love that. It wasn't Alabama or Auburn. That's what it was.
How nauseated are you by all the coverage? And I'll leave this into my last point. How nauseated are you by the coverage of the training camps that ESPN has shoved down our throats the last 2 weeks. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. They're at Broncos camp. They've been at Jets camp, and they do it every day on SportsCenter in the morning for about a half hour. I'm getting up to go to work. That's right, I'm up before 9 o'clock, and I'm getting up to go to work, and I see, oh, and we're gonna go to Jets camp, and we'll come back with highlights. Well, they come back with, like, I don't know, a 15-second highlight of Twins Indians, and they're like, oh, now back out to Jets camp. Anything is happening. Grass is growing at Jets camp. Mark Sanchez just picked his nose, and we're going to tell you all about it. Who cares? Let it go. It's training camp, Brett Clatier.
They could show Tim Tebow throwing 100-yard passes. I wouldn't care because as much I like Tim Tebow. Ugh. But it's been like, nauseating is a great word for it. It literally makes you want to vomit. Like, why are they showing Tim Tebow without his shirt on? Or why are they showing them stretch live feeds to the New York Jets going through calisthenics?
Why you gotta be homophobic? Why? Like, what's wrong with him running without a shirt on?
Well, like, why is that newsworthy?
I don't know. It got really big, though. It got insanely big.
Well, here's my thing. I have 3 frustrations of my own, Michael.
Okay. Oh, wow. Whoa. Wait a sec. Hold on.
Hey, let's have 6-7 beers before the Audi Awards and go hang out.
Have you been drinking by yourself in boredom and decided to do this?
I got a 3-pointer for myself.
You did not. I don't believe this is. Hold on.
And now it's time for hashtags
on the backdoor cut.
Hashtag surprised. Hashtag impressed. Hashtag shocked. Wow. This is unbelievable. I can't believe you actually did this.
Hashtag wait and see.
Wow.
Number 3 for me, and it's funny how you talk about the coverage ESPN is giving. And I know, I have their Twitter, it's public. You can follow and unfollow whoever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people who I really enjoy following because they know what they're talking about in the local sports world. But I don't need to see play for play of Vikings scrimmages. I don't need to see that Chris Cook made a great stop on a goal line situation. I don't need to say that the third string receivers are beating the third string cornerbacks.
Disease.
I don't need to see play for play. It's all, I mean, I get it. You know, oh, bro, why don't you unfollow them? You don't need to follow them. Unfollow me. I get it. But I do follow you for important stuff. Don't give me that nonsense of play-by-play of Vikings training camp scrimmages.
I hate training camp. I'm starting to hate training camp. I was actually thinking about this the other day. I'm almost begging to see preseason games, and I hate the preseason. The preseason is the most meaningless thing until training camp came around, and now they've finally overtaken preseason and found a way to make this more asinine and give you more coverage about things that don't matter at all. Do you remember the preseason that Dante Culpepper had right before he went into the season and, like, broke all 3 of his tendons in that 6th week? He was his stat line was like 5 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. After, in the preseason, he had like 10 touchdowns and no interceptions. Preseason doesn't matter, which means that training camp is like, if I don't even know what it would be. What is lower than not mattering? It's completely absurd.
You know what else is absurd? Go to my number 2.
Do it.
Is the fact that not only are there people live tweeting scrimmages in the first week of August and the first week of training camp, there's also someone keeping stats of the passing stat statistics from Joe Webb, Christian Ponder, Sage Rosenfeld.
What?
Why? Why do I need to see a tweet that says Christian Ponder today was 7-for-14 with 426 yards? How is it? First of all, how is that possibly complete 7 passes with 426 yards? That'd be very impressive. But is that a good sign for Christian Ponder? Like, I just don't know how to take those stats. First time it's training camp. Let's actually analyze them for a second. I think it was Christian Ponder was like 7-for-13 for like 130 yards. So is that good for our defense that Christian Ponder was only 7-for-13, or bad for Christian Ponder that he didn't torch our atrocious secondary? I don't know what to take from it. It's frustrating because not only is someone wasting their time taking stats for scrimmages the first week of training camp against their own team, they're also frustrating. I don't know how to analyze them.
Training camp.
Would you like to taste my smoked meatloaf?
I just could not care less.
Got him!
My real number one was moving off the ESPN bit. How big of morons are the New York Jets? I mean, it's one thing after another. Santonio Holmes can't shut up. There's reporters, intentionally, calling Mark Sanchez Tim. There's Rex Ryan coming out and saying, oh, I'm going to discipline. And then there's 2 fights in pretty much the same day in training camp. There's that 20-person scuffle yesterday. And then while owner guy for the Jets, I think it was Wayne Phillips or something like that. Wait, maybe that's Wade Phillips. Wayne Simeon, I don't know who it was. But Wayne something.
Wayne Simeon.
Yeah, and so I don't know who it was, but he's doing a state of the team address or whatever out by the practice field, and as he's doing it, Sal Palantonio on the Four Letter Network reported this today. While he's doing it, the cameras kind of start to zoom in behind him, and it's Rex Ryan stopping practice after a series of events of it was supposed to be a drill where no one hit anyone. Defense got a little rough, and so he says. He stops practice and makes the team start running wind sprints while the owner is giving a state of the team address. I mean, it is all outrageous, and it is honestly without Hard Knocks. It's like having Hard Knocks on ESPN, but that's not a good thing because I don't care about training camp. I'm sick of hearing about the Jets, sick of hearing about Tebow, sick of hearing about how much weight Rex Ryan has lost. He needs to lose 100 more pounds, quite honestly. I'm really sick of everything with the New York Jets. Just shut up, play football, and quit doing all the crap you're doing.
Number one.
Yes.
And it's a great, great transition by you there, Michael. And you always ruin a transition.
Sorry.
I always ruin a transition by saying how great the transition was. Mm-hmm. Now we just sidetrack 10 seconds. Hard Knocks. Training camp with the, you know who it is this year?
Isn't the Bengals?
The Miami.
No, Dolphins. Oh, that's right. It's the Dolphins.
The Miami Dolphins. Why would HBO do training camp with the Miami Dolphins for their Hard Knocks season 7 or whatever it is. I watched the preview. I watched a 3-minute preview. And you know what it was the preview was on? What their big, you know, their big hook and handle throughout the whole training camp was going to be? Who's going to start at quarterback between Matt Moore, Ryan Tannehill, and David Garrard?
Oh, my God. Who cares?
Disease.
It's honestly like, because Chad Johnson, now back to Chad Johnson, signed with the Dolphins. So they obviously know how much of a hit he was for the Bengals a couple years ago, the last time they did training
camp. One cares about the Dolphins anymore. Chad Johnson's obsolete.
People who watch HBO and watch Hard Knocks probably aren't really big-time diehards. They're on Sunday night on their high cable channels. They don't care what team it is. They want to see those charismatic personalities. And I think that's the only reason why Chad Johnson or Chad Ochocinco or Chad from Oregon State number 85 is on the Dolphins, and the only reason why the HBO network is following the Dolphins in training camp.
This is the Backdoor Cut, a meat sauce production.
Is it click it or ticket? No. Click the button.
Make the click or shoot the brick. As many of our avid Backdoor Cut listeners, and even my friends and your friends and
their friends,
I'm a big, 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 big diehard Dave Chappelle fan.
Oh, man.
I watched season 1, season 2, the lost episodes.
I would like to thank God Almighty for giving everybody so much and me so little.
Oh, God, he's just brilliant.
I love Dave Chappelle. And what do you expect my excitement to be while sitting at the chiropractor? I see that Dave Chappelle tickets are on sale for the following night.
I imagine it sounded something like this.
Oh!
Right?
Sitting in the waiting room at the chiropractor.
Something like that. Not once,
not twice.
And as I sip my soda that I'm sure somebody spit in.
Yes.
3 times on my phone, I'm ready to, all I need to do is click to order the tickets. And I did not know they were going like hotcakes in my defense. I did not know they had been on sale for only 20 minutes at that point and sold out in 45 minutes at the State Theater. And
Riding flipping cars over street lights falling down. And I've always wanted to be a part of that.
That's what it was like.
They were on sale for like weeks and I just didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Stupid me, of course. Then I go, if they're on sale now, they'll be on sale in an hour. Because the kicker here is, I didn't want to be stuck with a second ticket of $50 and couldn't find someone to go with. Little did I know, Michael, that in no more than an hour or two, those $50 tickets would be going on StubHub for $200. So 3 different times, instead of clicking it, instead of clicking to order the tickets, I bricked it and exited out of my browser on my phone. Through it, I can do it later.
You know, I started to tear up. I'm not too man enough to say that I almost cried.
You did shed a tear, didn't you?
I honestly want to. Can I say this? As a 24-year-old, a newly 24-year-old, college graduate, that I can say this completely honestly, I wanted to cry. Like, I literally wanted to cry. I didn't, but I wanted to just cry in my pillow and go to bed at 10 o'clock eating a thing of sherbet ice cream.
Disease.
That is really unfortunate. And I'm a big Dave Chappelle guy, too. I'm not as big on his stand-up as I am on the show. But people like me are what ruined Dave Chappelle of old that would yell out, yeah, Rick James, B-word, you know, like, King Kong ain't got nothing on me, that kind of stuff, the quotes from the show. So I'm people that ruined it. But he's hilarious. He is hilarious, and getting to see him live would be, I'm sure, a lot of fun. I hear he interacts with the crowd really well. Everybody said it was great. But you did not buy the ticket. Instead, you bricked it. Instead of making the click, you shot a brick.
That's true. I'm just a lot. All these emotions that have went away the last 5-6 days post-show are all coming back. And so I'm not afraid to admit I'm a little sad right now.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry we had to do this to you.
But for the list.
Yeah, I guess. Gabby Douglas, all-around winner in gymnastics for the women's side, comes back and falls off the balance beam yesterday and then didn't medal in the uneven bars. Is she a fraud, Brett Kluger? Are you clicking the ticket? No. Why can't I get this? I can't remember. Are you clicking the, No, I can't remember what it was. Are you going to make the click?
Are
you going to shoot a brick? Like Gabby Douglas is shooting bricks. Are you making the click on Gabby Douglas being a fraud, or are you shooting a brick?
I'm shooting a big brick on it because she won this. She almost single-handedly to a certain extent because she really got them going on the I think it was the floor exercise.
Mm-hmm.
She won the team gold. Then she also had a phenomenal all-around. She's 16 years old. She's going away with a team gold medal and an individual gold medal. I think that's a brick because she's not a fraud.
What happened to her? What's happened to her? Did she just not care? Is that it?
I don't know. She's 16 years old.
Yeah.
She's 16 years old. She peaked out. I mean, she won the individual gold after winning the team gold. Maybe she took it for granted. I don't know.
Usain Bolt says he wants a tryout with Manchester United of the English Premier League, the most prestigious club in the soccer world. Are you making the click or shooting a brick on Usain Bolt trying out for Manchester United? The Red Devils.
It's going to hurt you to say this, but I'm making the click.
Oh, come on!
Wayne Rooney.
No!
Usain Bolt is next on NBC.
Oh, my God.
Usain Bolt... I am making the click.
He's not Chad Johnson.
I don't know if he'll be successful.
It will be entertaining.
He's the fastest man in the world.
Yeah.
I think Wayne Rooney would be a little bit worried at practice looking over his shoulder that he might have someone else taking his striker spot.
It's absurd. He's not Chad Johnson. You remember when Chad Johnson tried out for, like, Sporting Kansas City or whatever, or Kansas City FC, some crappy MLS team. This is Manchester United. How big? Okay. And we know his ego is pretty big. Well, just aim a little lower.
Let's meet in the middle ground here. So he tried out for the Seattle Sounders or whatever. For the MLS. The MLS takes place in what continent?
America.
North America.
Yeah.
Okay. Manchester United is in the English Premier League, the most prestigious team of all time. Okay. It's far faster for him to be in that league. Or for that team, maybe he should be in the English Premier League. That's not a happy medium. You know what team you say Bolt should play for?
Who?
Ziggy Wolf's Minnesota English Premier League team. We can be the striker. We can build our team around Usain Bolt in the English Premier League. We got the stadium. Let's bring in the talent.
Argentina on a last-second three in the third quarter by Carmelo Anthony. A guy, I'm not sure who it was. I just saw Luis Scola getting all mad after the quarter.
Carmelo Anthony played for Argentina.
Who was it?
He said that Carmelo Anthony played for Argentina. He said that very odd. Last-second three by Argentina. Argentina on a last-second three by Carmelo Anthony.
What is it, click the ticket or?
click or shoot a brick.
So Carmelo shoots the three. What?
Write it down and make the click.
I know what it is. I'm giving you crap. Argentina runs by on a three where there's no one within 15 feet of him. Guy sprints up and gives him a little love tap on the jewels. And Luis Scola and Mike Krzyzewski to get into it after that. Are you making the click or shooting a brick on Argentina? Pretty much the poor sportsmanship by Argentina. Are you saying that is a brick for tapping him in the jewels? Are you saying, you know what, that's gamesmanship? They were frustrated. It's fine.
I think I'm shooting a big brick on that. Luis Scola and his whole Argentine team seems so mad that
they suck.
The Houston Rockets amnestied him a couple weeks ago, but I don't think you can ever tap someone in the family jewels. You know, when he goes up for a layup, give him a little shot to the ribs, or give him a little push when he's trying to go for an alley-oop. That's fine, whatever. But hitting a guy in the family jewels, that's never okay in professional sports.
Oscar Pistorius is the man that has half legs, half... Are they calling them blades? Is that what they are? They're the metal concoction.
Yeah, they call them Blade Runner.
We call them Blade Runner, and they're like metal concoctions that act as legs. He was in the Olympics. I believe it was the 400 breakneutier, and he gets to the semifinals, finishes last. And of course, there's been all the talk about, oh, is it fair? Is it not? Are you shooting a brick, or are you making the click that Oscar Pistorius being in the Olympics is fair?
Oh, making the click absolutely is fair. It's completely fair. I don't know who it was. It was like a Senegal guy or Ireland guy or like a Netherlands guy said it gives him a distinct advantage against everyone else. How? He's a runner who doesn't have any legs. How is that an advantage? If he can qualify with a couple of like frying pans that he's running on or whatever it was, you see what he's running on? That does not look like an advantage. It looks like something you could pancake with. I mean, absolutely he should have been an Olympian. His hard work, his effort deserves to be supporting or representing his country of South Africa in the Olympics.
Got him!
100%.
Barry Bonds is a no-doubt Hall of Famer, according to him. Are you making the click or shooting a brick that Barry Bonds is a no-doubt Hall of Famer?
Well, I'm going to make a click because I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. If it's first ballot Hall of Famer, no. I think that's all he'll be punished. He's obviously all-time home runs leader, single season and career. He should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he won't because of the performance enhancing and drugs, shadow that looms over his head. No doubt, yeah, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Maybe not in year 1, 2, 3. By year 10 of him being eligible, Barry Bonds will be a Hall of Famer. There's no doubt in my mind. I'm clicking it.
More baseball. Verlander K's 14 last night. 8 innings, no earned runs. Picks up his 12th victory. Jared Weaver picks up his 15th win. He's now 15-1, a 2.19 ERA. Weaver is your Cy Young over Verlander. Click it or shoot the brick.
Well, I'm shooting the brick because I think Steven Strasburg is so good. He's going to win the Cy Young in the American League and the National right. League. But no, I'm definitely bricking. I think Verlander's been better.
Wow.
I think the Tigers are going to end up winning the American League Central, and then the Angels are going to fall short to the Texas Rangers. I think that's going to have a lot of influence on it. I'm going with Justin Verlander right now on August 7th as the American League Cy Young winner for the end of the season.
Andrew McCutchen and Mike Trout lead their respective leagues in your favorite stat, WAR, wins over replacement. Click it or shoot a brick on WAR that is now shown on all stat pages right along with home runs, RBIs, average. Are you saying shooting a brick or are you clicking the fact that this is now a legitimate statistic and belongs with all the other power and average stats?
Yeah, I think asking alcoholics if you want to hear. Of course it does. I love WAR. WAR is my favorite stats in all of sports. Straight up, how many wins did your team get instead of having the ultimate average baseball player? I love the stat. It should be on every network. It should be right next to RBIs on FSN, on ESPN, on NESN, whatever network, Fox, whatever network it is, they should have WAR when every batter comes to bat or every pitcher takes the mound. Straight up, baseball is about winning, and however many more wins you help your team compared to someone else shows who the better player is.
That's why Gio Gonzalez is better than Steven Strasburg. Monte Ball
wins as a starting pitcher. It's a different stat.
Monte Ball beaten by 5 men in Wisconsin on the Wisconsin-Madison campus just weeks before camp starts. And then there's an investigation going on, Brett Cloutier, that he said it was unprovoked. And now authorities saying, whoa, 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 not so fast. We got to look more into this. Are you clicking or shooting a brick that this was an unprovoked attack?
I'm going to...
That's a double negative, isn't it?
And refuse statement because we'll see when the facts come out. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't there.
What if you were there, though?
The investigation will come out, apparently, but... I don't want to jump to conclusions. A college athlete, he's not a pro athlete. So because of his amateur status, I don't want to really...
Oh, God, shut up and get off your...
I don't think it's fair to him, so I'm taking the middle ground.
Stupid.
I'm not
That's
clicking
so
it.
Stupid.
I'm not bricking it. My computer, my phone ran out of battery, and just shut off on me.
Alex Morgan, a better soccer player or better at being good-looking, Brett Cloutier? What? Just name one. I don't care. I think she's awesome.
I'm a big Alex Morgan fan.
Oh, my God.
She's a phenomenal athlete.
She makes Hope Solo look like a bum.
I don't know. I'm going to make Hope Solo.
Are you really?
I'm a taller girl, though. I like to tell her I'm 6'5". I don't need to have an Alex Morgan who's 5'6", 5'7". Hope Solo is about as tall as me. We could have some super baby.
Seth Meyers says Kristen Wiig is a top 10 SNLer of all time.
No.
There's
no way, is there?
No. You gotta shoot a brick.
Brick.
I could name 10 off the top of my head that were better. I'm not going to, but I think I could.
That's how many bricks I threw up for Kristen Wiig being a top 10 SNLer of all time.
A new bar is opening in downtown called Union. There's going to be a retractable roof on it. Brick? Or are you clicking on that?
Ziggy Wilf buy that, Justin I know the people in the state legislature that wouldn't give him a retractable roof.
I might never go to Brothers again.
Yeah, right. No.
That really made him hang up the phone. That's it.
As they say, new to three. Okay.
That's exciting, though. I'm really excited for that. The Backdoor Cut, KFAN.com. Saturday is the sauce page on air section of said website. Underneath his face is our beautiful play we've drawn up for the Backdoor Cut. And this is our Variety Hour basketball coming up. You can find us on Facebook, the Backdoor Cut on KAUG with Mike Gallagher and Brett Cloutier. That was, of course, before we came to KFAN.com, they gave us a very lucrative contract.
Contract not lucrative, nor a contract.
Brett, where are we on Twitter?
You can follow myself at Brett Cloutier on Twitter, BRETTCLOUTAIER, or my co-host at Mike _, that's that little line, _, Galley, 21, deuces.
Terry Ryan had said Trevor Plouffe was only going to be an outfielder. Well, now he stayed back and was working on some infield stuff,
really?
So they can have his availability
really?
Come and play the infield. But I think that's a moot point. You got Luke Hughes, who can play second. He can play a little first. He could play third. Honorable mention, one more, just to get my Twins one out of the way. Nick Blackburn will be an all-star. Honorable mention.
God, that's just so preposterous.
Well, who else is the Twins going to represent the Twins? That's what my bid is going. They're going to have one representative, and his moving an eighth over on the mound has really worked in spring training. Now, granted, I'm with Nick that you take spring training numbers with a salt truck of salt, but I don't see anyone else really jumping up and taking that all-star
Justin
spot.
Justin Morneau or Joe Mauer have to be the all-star of this team, don't they, Nick?
Or Liriano.
You've been listening to the Backdoor Cut, a Meat Sauce production.
Because everyone was born with a ball in their hand.
That was 2 hours with you. Which is probably the reason why I've had enough tonight. Time out.
Got him! Got him! Got him!
Nice play. Pushed him off the block. Stole the ball, and here he comes again. Probably upset on the scrape down to the box area, but Royce turns to the fans, and why not? He deserves the accolades. All set up by great defense. Royce to the chin. Send it in with that motor.
I could bask in the glory of my own genius.
Okay, bye-bye. Forever young, I want to be.